All right. Good afternoon, Clear Creek County. Welcome to What's Upstream. I'm here with my co-host, Lori Beckel. This is Mark Cuccinella. You're listening to KYGT LPFM 102.7.
102.7.
And 10, I've only said that 10,000 times.
I know it.
And 103.9. But the big one is clearcreekradio.com. We stream over that crystal clear worldwide 24/7. And just as a note to everyone who's listening, you can, if you go on the website, you can see all of our shows and all the other shows of the radio station archived. And I think they've got them archived back to about 2022. So there's a number of shows on there, and if you're jonesing for more of this kind of thing, we're right there. And, of course, all the great music shows as well. Lori, tell us about our guest today.
Well, I will, but so our guest is Kent Slaymaker.
There we go.
Our good friend Kent Slaymaker. But if I could, I'd like to honor the sky for a minute, Mark.
Sure.
You know, tough times are happening right now and happening to a lot of our fellow Clear Creekians, and our hearts are really with you. We're trying to do everything we can to be helpful. But the skies have given us gifts this week. And I hope you out there in K-Goat Land were able to see the Northern Lights last night, because we saw them some months ago, but not like last night. Last night, they started, I think, about 6:30. Could see them in the northern skies, a beautiful red, mostly red. Could see them with the naked eye. If you held your camera up to take a picture, that lens that captures the infrared,
I think so,
or something like that, boy, those pictures were stunning. So we had the Northern Lights last night. Two nights ago, we had that sunset that was heavenly. And then Mark, the early bird, saw an incredible morning sunrise this morning.
Yeah, so, who needs coffee when you see that?
Oh, gee, my gosh.
That perked me right up.
The celestial gods have been good to us this week.
Can I just get a little philosophical about this for a moment, please?
Do you mind, Kent, if we get Kent is very philosophical.
You know, day to day, our problems can seem overwhelming, and especially we're in a tough spot. Let's face it, this country is really, it can be very overwhelming, almost crushing sometimes. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I go out and I look at the sky, whether it's during the day, that incredible blue that we have, or when I'm out at night and I see the beautiful stars, and it just reminds me that, you know, our place in the universe is—it's small, and you know, I don't need to feel overwhelmed about events that are just an instant in time. You know, we live in a universe that is 13.6 billion years old. You know, we're in the Milky Way galaxy that has between 200 and 400 billion stars, and it's one of 100 billion galaxies. It's just overwhelming to think about how insignificant you know, the politics in Washington is in the context of the universe.
Absolutely.
That helps me. I don't know why, but it does.
Well, and when we're overwhelmed, it's so nice to find something we can have control over. And looking up, mm-hmm, is something we can have control over, and our skies are giving us great gifts and reasons to feel happy and grateful for what we have. So I appreciate what you have to say, Mark. Kent, I don't know if you want to chip in too before we start talking mead, but
sure, what a wonderful way to start a conversation. And I was up early as well today, so we're bottling today, so it's always early for me, and it was nice to get to see the sunrise. And in fact, there was an added nice component for me. I was in our brew house and had the doors shut. Wouldn't have seen the sunrise at all, except a neighbor came by to borrow something from our shop. And since he came by, so because of a neighbor connection, I got to see the beautiful sunrise. That was really nice.
And that speaks volumes about the kind of person Kent Slaymaker is, that people are coming out of the woodwork to ask him to borrow something or to have a meeting at the shop or whatever. So Mark and I are just delighted to have our friend and local mead maker, Kent Slaymaker, on with us today to really talk about Slaymakers and making mead and wherever else the conversation goes. So welcome, Kent.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah.
I love y'all's show.
Thank you so much. So tell us a little bit about, first of all, how you and Chris and Carrie got to Clear Creek County.
Yes. Well, my wife, Chris, and our daughter, Carrie, we came here right after my daughter was born. She was like 3 weeks old or something, 6 weeks maybe. And we came here because I've got family in Colorado, and Chris is from Montana. So, you know, it was pretty natural. I'd been out here before, and Idaho Springs seemed like a natural place to come to.
How did you find it?
Well, you know, really, I'd been through Idaho Springs plenty of times before.
Many people have been through. Yeah.
I always thought of it as the snow globe town in the winter, because it looked like a snow globe. Uh-huh. But basically, I had a job down in Denver, and I just drew a circle of acceptable commute, you know, around it. And Idaho Springs was in it, so we're like, cool, let's live in a mountain town. That sounds way better for us than anything else. So, and we've loved it since we've been here.
Well, we've loved having you.
Thanks. I'm excited not to have to drive down to the city every day anymore. So yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, so terrific.
So some of you who may not come downtown in Idaho Springs on a regular basis, Kent, tell us about your location and how you ended up in that spot.
Well, absolutely. So our business, Slaymaker Cellars, is a meadery. So we make mead, which is honey wine. It's mead, not meat. Everybody's always like, you brew meat? But no, it's mead.
Yuck.
I know, right? But no, it's mead. So you think like wine, but just made from honey instead of grapes. And yes, we're in a downtown location. We brew there, but we age our wine in barrels there. And we also have a nice tasting room where you can come get a glass or a flight. We also carry a pretty good selection of Colorado wines, ciders, and sakes. Things we don't make, but other great Colorado producers do. And
small producers such as yourself.
Pretty much, yeah. Some of them more established. Some of them much newer than us, too. And other meads as well that we don't make that other people do. And so, you know, we're here in Colorado, and I've started businesses in other states and been part of startup businesses in other states. And here in Colorado, they really have – every politician says they support small business. Here in Colorado, they seem to actually do it. The way that licenses work and things, it's very small business friendly and startup friendly. So we're able to do quite a bit with our business that alcohol laws would keep you from doing other places, like carrying other people's wine, having an actual wine shop in the front as well as our own product, things like that. Mm-hmm. So it's a great place to come down to try a bunch of different stuff, to get a glass or to get a bottle to take home. And we're, right on Main Street. We're right across from Tommyknockers.
Nice.
And we do tour.
Holidays coming. And we're really encouraging people to buy local.
Yeah, there you go.
And so I'm guessing you ship.
We do. Yeah. So you can buy in the shops. Great place to get gifts. But we do also ship to 42 different states, direct to consumers. It's not in like liquor stores anywhere outside of the state. Mm-hmm. But it is in liquor stores and bars and restaurants across the state.
Terrific.
Yes. Yeah, that's a great idea. My son, I think, I hope he's not listening, might appreciate a bottle of that.
Yeah. Oh, it's very tasty.
And you can buy it in store to ship or from our website.
Oh, so you have a website.
Mm-hmm. Slaymakersellers.com.
Yeah. Terrific. That's pretty, makes a lot of sense, Slaymakers.com. Yeah, terrific. So tell us, how did you get into mead and mead making?
Well, you know, I grew up in the wine industry to an extent. My parents were wine sellers, and I've been I've worked as a winemaker and a distiller, and also as a cheesemaker. And I had Chris and I actually had a cheesemaking business in Arkansas before we moved here. Mm. And when we wanted to move to the mountains, so we sold that business, and then we came out here. And the small business bug had certainly bit us. So while I had a day job when we first moved here, and to support, you know, having a young child and everything, we knew we wanted to get back into that. In fact, we had a basement at our house that we moved into that we're like, we knew it was perfect for something, for some small business. So we started making mead, because Colorado being a headwater state, you know, milk is very water intensive. So cheese and milk and stuff, very doable here. There are some wonderful cheeseries here in the state, but be much harder for us to get into, especially here in a town, not out on a farm somewhere. So we found, we had made mead and wine homebrew style in the past before, and made pretty good stuff. So we found that Colorado does have excellent honey. Like Colorado clover honey is kind of known worldwide as incredibly good. Incredibly good stuff. So we just started homebrewing. We got ourselves educated. We went out to UC Davis, which University of California, Davis. They're kind of the pinnacle of wine knowledge and fermentation knowledge in general nowadays. And so we went out there and got classes and lessons to really up our skills, and just kind of spun the business up from homebrew. Mm. And nice. It was about 6 years ago that we got all of our licenses. So we got all of our licenses approved to go and to make and sell mead January of 2020. So,
wow,
just
terrific.
In time for COVID.
I know. We were like, all right, smooth sailing ahead.
Yeah.
But, you know, it worked out okay for us because, you know, early days, you're not going to be making any money anyway, and we're just brewing and getting stuff out there.
Get your feet on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and liquor stores were still open, so they were picking up new products. So really how it affected us on the business side anyway is just that we were just very liquor store heavy, having our clients. We didn't have any like restaurants or bars or anything, because they didn't want to change anything for the limited way they could be open. They're like, we're not changing anything right now. It's too crazy.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, so can I ask you, follow up on the, I think you said Colorado honey is good honey or something. Explain to us what makes a good honey and what gives honey different flavors.
That's such a great question, because so many times, and even for myself before I started making mead, you kind of just think like honey's honey, right? Mm-hmm. And I would excuse somebody that, absolutely, because when you go to the grocery store to get it, you just see honey. If you have a fancy store, you might have a couple kinds of honey. And unfortunately, honey labeling laws are almost non-existent. So a lot of honey is
diluted.
Yeah, with corn syrup and brown dye to make it look like honey.
Oh.
Yeah, I know, unfortunately, right?
Yeah.
So
read the back label.
It probably doesn't say that it's diluted. Like I said, labeling laws are almost non-existent.
Oh.
So the first thing that makes it good is just knowing a good honey source and knowing that they're not, you know, diluting it or doing something bad like that. But the second thing is just, you know, honey comes from, you know, flowers and meadows and stuff. And Colorado just has a wonderful wildflower scene. And so it's not that it's just absolutely the best in the world. There's other places that have wonderful honey too. But Eastern Europe has incredible honey. Lots of different places do. But it's different everywhere, because what makes the different flavors are the flowers that the bees are pollinating. So they'll be pollinating this flower, that flower, and that gives the honey different flavors.
Mm-hmm. So. Kent, I want to share a personal experience with that. I was traveling in Italy on a hiking trip some years ago, and I stayed at this place, and they served some cheese with honey, and I didn't even know it was honey. I couldn't figure out what is this thing that I'm eating. That's how different it was from any honey I'd ever had. And come to find out, it was chestnut honey from chestnut trees. It's a very limited product, of course, but they had some, and it was, it was an amazing thing. So it can vary greatly depending on the source of the pollen.
Exactly. Yeah. Chestnut honey is it's intense. It's really different than you would think.
It
almost doesn't taste like honey, like you're saying.
Yeah.
We carry a few different kinds in our shop, so you can come try and see what we're talking about with the different flavors.
Yeah.
And the Colorado clover honey is really one of my favorites. It's incredible. And so that's obviously the bees are pollinating clover.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you let your clover actually bloom, they're able to do it. And it's actually a really important food source for bees. So it's a great thing to let your clover bloom if you're lucky enough to have some clover in your wherever you're at. So the clover honey is really amazing. It's almost like ice cream. It's got this vanilla and like a cinnamon kind of aftertaste to it. I love brewing with it too. We use it all the time in our special seasonal meads, but we don't have it in any of our regulars, but it's our go-to for our seasonal meads.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, because it's kind of special, I guess.
Well, it's just
nice. So you buy that from a co-op someplace?
Well, we work with a couple different folks, but mostly we work with Beth's Bees, or B Squared is what it's called. They're down in Berthoud.
Hmm.
So they're down on the Front Range, but they've got hives all over, and we get most of our stuff from them. And the vast majority of our honey is from Colorado. But, you know, as the bees pollinate the different flowers, and that's what makes the different honeys. Not every flower grows here.
Right.
So I actually brought with me some of our orange blossom honey, our orange blossom mead. And so that's made from orange blossom honey. Hmm. We don't have orange trees here, so this is California honey. And you can get, you know, like Florida orange blossom honey, you can get California orange blossom honey. They're both great, but they're a little different, and we really like the California one.
Interesting. Yeah.
This may be kind of off topic a little bit, but we've heard that bees have been in trouble lately with the hive collapse
syndrome. Mm-hmm.
So has that impacted your getting honey at a reasonable price?
A little, some. Our apiary is what it's called, a bee farm. The apiary we work with, they're very on top of those things. They're very talented.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't speak for them, but our ability to buy honey from them hasn't really been that affected by it. A couple years ago when there were a bunch of fires, the honey was all smoky. You could taste it. And so our mead was a little smoky that year.
Wow.
And, you know, wines that you get with there's wildfires, grape wines, I mean, they'll be a little smoky that year. That's normal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, the colony collapse is an issue, and that's often caused by mites or other stress things that is related to climate change. That's why there's more mites and things and pollution. But the whole... the big thing that I'm always asked about in the tasting room is, aren't all the bees disappearing? I heard that, and it's like a big mystery. Where are they going? Well, it was a mystery at first, but basically it's solved, and it's pollution, you know. Bees are very sensitive to air pollution, as you might imagine. And as far as them disappearing, well, have you ever tried to find a dead bee in a meadow? Like, they died, and they fell on the ground, and so you can't find them. But that's mostly wild bees, wild local bees. Honeybees aren't going to go extinct for the same reason cows aren't going to go extinct, because we farm them,
gotcha.
You know, and we're not going to let them. But wild bees are really important for the ecosystem, and keeping bee-friendly plants around is something that you can really do. You know, letting your dandelions bloom. I know people think they're a weed, but that's just because when Monsanto made Roundup, they couldn't figure out how to make it not kill dandelions, so they started an ad campaign calling them weeds. They're pretty flowers, and they're a really important nutrient source for bees. And there's other local flowers and stuff. You plant local stuff, and you're really helping the wild bees a lot.
They're
often solitary as well. They may or may not live in a hive.
Oh.
Yeah, there's many different kinds of bees. The bees that we... get honey from, you would know this better than I do, but I believe they're European honeybees, aren't they?
Well, it depends, and I don't remember exactly off the top of my head, but they are from not this continent, and they're brought in, and they are some special bee that was you know, just some wild bee that was pretty prolific at honey making, and mm-hmm. so we bred them over the thousands of years, you know. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, 20 or 5 or 30 years ago, there was the African bee. Remember all that, where the African bees were going to change all the hives, and they were going to, you know, be more aggressive, and that never happened, of course. That was just a big news story. But there's all kinds of bees. Mm-hmm. My wife and I have wildflowers, mm-hmm. a patch of wildflowers in a part of our yard, mm-hmm. and it's amazing the different flying insects that'll come in and cross-pollinate those plants. Yeah.
When we first started the company up, you know, so we get honey delivered in 5-gallon buckets.
And yeah.
Nowadays, we do about 10 of those at a time in a batch. So we could nearly start getting them in drums if we wanted to. But in the early days, the 5-gallon buckets was always one was multiple batches for us. But we would put the bucket outside to wait to clean it off when we were done. But then the cleaning crew would show up, and all the ladies would get to enjoy just eating all the honey out of the bucket. And they got that thing sparkling clean. And we don't keep
beer,
bees.
Beer ladies. I'm sorry, not
beer bee ladies.
Bee ladies.
Bee ladies, yeah.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah. So they would come clean it up and get the excess honey out of the barrel, out of the bucket.
Yeah, and, you know, as long as we're on the subject of bees, I mean, they're truly fascinating. All the bees that you see out are lady bees. They are the females. And they are democratic. Like, it sounds crazy to think about an insect hive being democratic, but they really are. They do, when they go out and find food sources and come back, they send out scouts. The scouts come back, and then the hive votes on where to go. And have you ever heard of the waggle dance?
Yeah, they dance. Yeah, I've seen video of that.
They do. It's wild. They will get in the hive, and in the hive, everything's vertical. Mm-hmm. So they will, like, waggle and walk forward just a little bit. And the direction that they're going off of vertical corresponds to the direction the food is, like, left or right of the sun. Mm-hmm. And the length of time that they walk forward waggling before looping around is the distance that they're going. And they vote by getting other bees to dance with them. And if enough dance saying, okay, yeah, we'll go this way, then they send a bunch of the bees out there. It's,
you know,
wild.
No kidding.
Yeah, insects are just an amazing world that we're just not aware of. Mm-hmm. I took a couple of sections of entomology when I was in school, and you get down on the level of insects, and it's a crazy world. But mm-hmm. Speaking of bees, my wife hangs hummingbird feeders, and when one is empty, and we've got bees that come and they enjoy that as well, and if one of them's empty, one of the containers, she'll take it down, and the bees will still come, and they will circle, and they'll just stay right circling exactly where that thing is supposed to be. And wait a minute, where is it? It's not here. I'm going to keep trying. And yeah,
that's wild.
Yeah, it is. It's crazy.
Well, they were sent out on a mission from the waggle dance.
So it's right. They know exactly where they're headed.
That's amazing. Yeah. So a lot about bees.
Yeah. Right.
Talk to us about maybe some history of mead and how you got into, or what the process of making mead is.
Sure. So, I mean, on the history side, it's the oldest fermented beverage. There's records of it, or, well, it's not quite records because it's prehistoric, but there's evidence of it, pot charge and things, mm-hmm. going back 30,000 years. That's 30,000 years. Oh, that's before we built cities. Mm-hmm. You know, it's wild to me. And one of the things that I love about mead making, just personally, is that deep connection to history and thinking how many people before us have made it, especially when we started the business brewing in our basement and thinking about, you know, how many people over history woke up and went around the corner or into their basement or shed or whatever to brew their mead or ancient beer or whatever. It's just that deep connection with history is so wonderful, especially because, you know, as you were saying earlier, the times are wild, and it's wonderful to think about the connection with so many different types of people, because basically every culture on the planet has at some point brewed mead, as opposed to beer or grape wine. Mead really has been made by almost everybody, and that's one of the reasons there's so many different styles. It's just so wide open, the styles of mead that there are.
And that may be because bees are so pervasive.
I think so. They're all over the world, and honey is just like a naturally occurring processed food, mm-hmm. you know. And so early humans, it was a reliable food source, just like it is for bears or raccoons or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so it was just there. We certainly have been eating honey since before we were humans. And so mixing with water and then some fermentation happens just seems natural that it happened. You know, I figure maybe they were making prehistoric soda by mixing it with water, making a nice drink. And if you didn't finish it, well, the next morning probably made you feel a little funny. And so you said, well, I'll do that on purpose next time. Now, throughout history, it fell out of favor different places, especially in Europe and the West. Grape wine and beer kind of came up as the farming kind of changed, and they started being able to industrialize those crops more. But places like Eastern Africa, Ethiopia and Eritrea and places like that, kept it going from antiquity to today with no real interruptions. And I think that's really cool. And nowadays it's brewed on every continent, including Alaska. There's a bar at McMurdo Station, and there's some folks that occasionally make mead there. I read that on Wikipedia a few years ago and had it confirmed a week ago at our tour on Saturday, because there's somebody whose cousin is stationed at McMurdo, and she texted him while she was on the tour when I said that, and she was like, they really do, wow. So that's accurate.
How cool.
And
so bees up there. They're in Alaska.
Oh, no, that's there. That's Antarctica. And there's no bees.
And I heard you say Alaska.
No, I'm sorry. Antarctica. I may have misspoke. It's Antarctica, but there's no bees down there, but I guess they have honey somehow, and somebody has a homebrew set up going on.
It's a concentrated food source,
mm-hmm.
and it's it's easy to transport. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's that would be a logical thing to make.
I hope we're not outing anybody on the radio here, getting them in trouble for their homebrew set up at the science station. It's probably fine.
Well, I think they're going to be okay.
Right on.
It's a long ways away.
And then as far as the process goes, you know, it's really simple, and that goes to the ancientness of it being discovered so early, I suppose, or invented, or however you want to think about it. But effectively, any time you're making an alcoholic beverage, you're using yeast to ferment sugar into alcohol. So for us, it's just that honey is the sugar source. Now, it won't ferment directly, of course. It's way too thick, and so honey famously never goes bad, right? Mm-hmm. And so fermentation is just controlled spoiling, by the way. So just spoiling with style, you know. So we water it down, first of all. And so that's a neat thing about mead. By definition, we have to water it down. So we get to dial it in and choose exactly what sweetness level, what concentration to start at. You don't get that with a grape juice or making beer. Kind of you control that by your farming techniques and how much sugar is in the fruit or the grain.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get to dial that in right at the beginning. So that's nice. And we pitch our yeast in. There's tons of different types of yeast, but they do kind of the same thing. They give you different flavors, different notes. They ferment more vigorously or slowly. And it takes about, 2 months for our wine style meads to ferment. The beer style ones go a bit faster. And then when they're done, we clarify them, we filter them, and then, like I said earlier, today we're actually bottling the wildflower today. So, anybody who's interested in seeing that more in detail and kind of how we do things, we do tours every Saturday at 3.
Very fun.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Kent, we're going to take a quick break,
mm-hmm.
and when we come back, let's talk about the different varieties of mead that we have. And Lori, I know you've got some other questions to follow up. Let's just take a quick break, and we'll be right back. music of Johann Sebastian Bach. More of that on Saturday morning, by the way, at 8 o'clock, Morning with Mozart. But for now, you're listening to What's Upstream. I'm your co-host Mark Cuccinella, here with Lori Beckel, and our honored guest today is Kent Slaymaker from Slaymakers down on Minor Street in Idaho Springs. You're listening to Clear Creek Radio, KYGT, LPFM, 102.7, 103.9 on your FM dial, streaming over clearcreekradio.com. Kent, thank you for joining us today. I know you're a busy guy, and you're bottling today, right?
That's right, and thanks again for having me. Yeah, we're bottling our wildflower mead today.
Yeah, nice. Well, when we took our little break, you had mentioned the different types of mead that you produce. Some are beer-like, some are wine-like. Tell us. I think a lot of people might not be aware of the differences. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. Well, there's a bunch of different kinds, and actually, I brought a few with me today. So, Lori, you want to try one while we're talking about
radio,
it?
On the radio, is that legal, Mark? Can I?
Well, Bill Mayer has been drinking. Remember, you had the champagne hour for decades.
Oh,
here.
Fabulous!
So there you
okay.
go.
Well, there you go.
Well, I've got a little. Yes, just a little bit in a cup.
So
beautiful, clear color, clear yellowish color. Yep.
So that's our Nice to Meet You, and that is kind of the more, quote, beer style. But it doesn't have any grain in it or anything. It's just that it's lower alcohol. It's got hops. It's carbonated. So it drinks a bit like a Pilsner. Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Mm. It tastes a little beery. I definitely get that.
And that's what we're aiming for on that one. So that's one of the styles. There's so much terminology and stuff with the different styles, but to stick with kind of beer style. Some are made more like wine. That's our main thing, the wine-style ones. They drink just like a grape wine.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, there's also, you can make it more like a liqueur as well.
So how do you do that?
So it's all goes back to what we were talking about before, of the kind of concentration of honey in water at the beginning, how much you water it down. So if you water it down more, then when you ferment it dry, meaning all the sugar gets converted to alcohol, you'll have lower alcohol. So the beer style is like 4%. Mm-hmm. Wine style is like 10 to 15. And the liqueur styles are upwards of 20%, and with residual sweetness as well.
I see. Does that take a longer fermentation time?
Absolutely. The yeast gets stressed by more alcohol in there. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes you have to double or triple ferment it.
Oh, I see.
We're also working with a distillery down the hill to fortify, so like port or sherry, kind of. So that'll be pretty fun, too.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure years ago you talked about in prehistory when this was first made, I'm sure they used natural yeast to ferment, but do you use... You use commercial yeast of some kind?
That's exactly right. So they didn't even know yeast was in it. It wasn't considered an ingredient until we had microscopes, basically. So, yes, we've done wild fermentations. They're fun, but they're unpredictable, and they can end up sour, which can be fun, a sour drink, but you don't want everyone to be that. You don't want it to be that accidentally.
Yeah.
So we get normal brewer's yeast from a supply company.
Nice. All right. Mm-hmm. So
a question I have, honey, the health benefits of honey have been touted for a long time. I'm guessing you might be asked at the shop, is mead healthy, and how you might answer that?
Sure. We do get that question all the time, and it makes total sense. I can't speak to any health benefits of honey. I'm not a dietitian or anything. But I know that in sometimes it's talked about as good for allergies, which it can sometimes be true if the bee happens to be pollinating the thing you're allergic to. But you don't see a lot of ragweed honey out there, so I don't know how helpful it'll be unless you're allergic to alfalfa or clover or something. Mm-hmm. But it can be. Any of that effect, though, I think is probably lost in mead because it's watered down significantly, the honey, in order to make it down to mead. It's about 3 parts water for 1 part honey. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the sugar is turned into alcohol. So I mean, queer whether sugar or alcohol is better or worse for you. But I think any health benefits are probably outweighed by the it being an alcoholic beverage.
Yeah.
But it can be nice and relaxing to enjoy. There's nothing wrong with enjoying a glass after work or something.
Yeah, I see. Okay.
Nice. So tell us a little bit about your business. You've been there since 2000, and I heard you say that you have wholesale sales to various liquor stores, I guess, around the community and maybe regionally. But tell us about your actual shop.
Yeah, that's right. So we started in 2020, and we've got the tasting room where you can come try stuff, but we're also at liquor stores and restaurants all around the state, a couple hundred different accounts there. And yeah, we started, my wife and I, we started it out of our basement, but we've now grown and we're award-winning, and we're employee-owned as well, too, now.
Yeah.
Tell us about your award.
Oh, well, we've won a few, you know. There's a wine and mead contests every year, and we submit our different wines, and we do better and worse some years than others, but we've won bronzes, silvers, golds, and double golds over the years. And
beautiful.
We're real proud of those, and really, on the business side again, really, I'm really personally enjoying kind of, we've been getting our feet under us on the production side lately. We've been making enough to keep up with the demand, which is wonderful. Great problem to have, but still a problem. Running out all the time isn't ideal. And so we've gotten bigger tanks and been able to kind of keep up more. And in fact, the bottling today is, we're still getting used to the larger bottling size, bottling runs, more mead. And yeah, it's a great time, man.
So these contests, I guess I don't know much about that, but I'm sure your technique and your process, you're refining that all the time, and you're not making, a product that's better or worse. You're making it the same way. And so it must have something to do with the honey that creates the finished product that's so good, right?
Well, it's certainly both. Your skill and techniques and perhaps even equipment certainly improve over time.
I got you.
But you're absolutely right. At the end of the day, especially for traditional meads, which means that it's just honey, water, and yeast, as opposed to putting like fruit or spices in. So for those traditional meads where it's just honey, it really is about just trying to have it as clean of a fermentation process as possible, not stressing the yeast out, and your main job is to kind of just get out of the way of the wonderful tasting honey that you sourced. And the best mead maker in the world can't make up for like bad ingredients. And so getting really good stuff is really important to us, and that's why we work with B Squared so much.
You found that to be the best honey available to you?
Well, you know, I mean, I know that there's probably other producers, and I'm sure they're great, but the B Squared is really good stuff, and they have a large enough production that we can consistently get from them at the volumes that we get, and it's they have plenty more, too. Like, we're not their biggest client, even.
So you're not running them out of honey or anything?
No. They're great, nice folks, and they make really great. Well, their bees make really great honey.
Well, and I would think there's a creativity also involved here, that you're making different tastes from different honeys that you get, and that's kind of a fun part too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We have our flagships products that we make all the time, and there's creativity and refining of your craft and all the fine details and making this one just a little better than the last batch and tweaking things. But then there's also our seasonals, things that maybe we've never made before or haven't made in years, or we got a weird honey in, so we want to use it for something. And that's really fun and creative. When we are running low on our seasonals and we get to design the next recipe is a lot of fun. People throwing out different ideas and deciding what to make next.
Huh, very good.
Are you always looking for different unique sources for honey? I mean, they might be limited, but how do you decide that you found a honey that is appropriate to utilize?
Well, absolutely. Always looking for that type of thing, and it's a lot of fun. Our honey, The apiary we work with is also a honey importer. So a lot of times they'll contact us and say, like, hey, we found this cool cranberry honey. Do you want to try it or some other fun
honey? Yeah, like the one John has brought to you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That is a honey from the East Coast. And there's, I know you and John have talked, my significant other, have talked about this honey that he has. Mm-hmm. And you've encouraged him to bring it in and brew some mead.
Absolutely. We'll do some homebrew style. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
You know, and luckily we've gotten to the point where we know that if it's good quality honey, we know we can make good mead out of it. And we may not know exactly what it'll taste like, but we know it'll be good quality.
Mm-hmm. So when you talk about tweaking the process, I'm not sure what that means.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you put honey, like you said, honey, yeast, and water. And how do you tweak that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's a good question. So, you know, I mean, there's a million little things in trying to make sure that the yeast stays happy and not stressed. And so, I mean, for instance, simply aerating the honey water mixture is called must. Mm-hmm. Simply aerating that really well before you put in the yeast is huge, because the early stages of fermentation, actually, well, it's not even fermentation, but the early stages of yeast growth is actually aerobic. They need oxygen. So having as much air mixed in there as possible is really great for healthy yeast. So
is that done by stirring, mm-hmm. or do you have some mechanical way of aerating?
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got an immersion blender that we use to mix the honey and water together. Mm-hmm. And so then it's just a question of, you know, kind of mixing some air in as well when you're done mixing the yeast in. So just kind of holding it halfway in, basically, and trying not to get it all over the brew house when you do it.
Or yourself.
Oh, getting sprayed by mead is definitely a common occurrence. I'm sometimes at the school pickup line just reeking of wine because I was brewing it and it got all over me.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know. I'm assuming an experienced mead maker can identify stressed yeast.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
That look like?
Yeah, it's great. And not even makers, but experienced tasters, sommeliers, and folks like that. Stressed yeast will cause off flavors. So just unpleasant flavors
so
in there.
So tasting is part of it?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Tasting as during the 2 months of time it takes to ferment, tasting it throughout that process is very important, and other more scientific measurements as well. But at the end of the day, it's about the taste. You should be tasting it regularly.
So you're tasting it, and now you notice that it's off a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Are there ways that you can dial that back in?
Absolutely. And so different techniques, and we'll taste and we'll talk about it. In fact, we did that this morning before bottling. I got in early to filter on bottling days. I get there down there about 5:30, and when other folks rolled in, we were sampling just to make sure up to quality standards and tastes good and like we want it to before we bottling it. Because another move that's in your pocket is to always just let it sit, let it age. You know, if it's not quite where you want it to be, well, then we'll let it age. You know, it's better than bottling something that's not ready. No wine before it's time, right?
Okay. So who's helping you in this bottling process? Are these employees?
Well, co-owners and employees.
Tell us about that.
Yeah, so there's, I suppose, 8 of us now, and most of them are co-owners. But when you've worked at Slaymaker Cellars for 6 months, you can apply to become an owner and you start earning shares. And it's a real legit owner. You own part of it. Sometimes employee ownership, there's a million ways to do it, but we distribute shares based on how many hours you work, basically. So a full-time person will get more shares than a part-time. And there's a few people that aren't co-owners just because they haven't worked there for long enough yet. But most of the folks you see there are co-owners.
And why did you decide to go that way?
Right. Well, we had a business before, and so a lot of this was lessons from there. One, I just personally think that it's the moral and ethically right thing to do. I think more, I think every company should be employee-owned, personally. I think every single one. But certainly, realistically, I think more should. I think we should encourage it more. But it's not just a moral stance. It makes stronger companies. There's been plenty of research about it, and it just makes stronger companies. It makes sense when you think about it, because people have some skin in the game. They want to stay. They're getting more loyalty. In an age where, like, company pensions are basically a thing of the past, it's something we can do for our folks, you know?
Mm-hmm. So can people's circumstances change, and, you know, someone might move away from the community, mm-hmm. and for no reason other than they nothing to do with their employment mm-hmm. associations, they might leave. Mm-hmm. And do they cash in their ownership? How does that work?
Well, that's always an option, but they don't have to. They own it. And just because they don't work there anymore, if they don't work here anymore, they won't be earning any more shares. Mm. But their shares that they have, they own. Like, it's not our place to tell them what to do with it. They can sell it back to the company if they want to cash out, or they can keep it for future residuals and just to still be part of the group. We have a couple folks like that that have a share or two that don't necessarily that they moved or something like you said. Mm-hmm. And it's fine, you know.
That's right. The shares go with them, I guess.
Yeah, they own it. If they want to sell it back, that's fine. The only thing we don't do is, like, you can't sell it to someone else. It's not a publicly traded, like, stock type thing. You know, it's just an ownership between us. Mm-hmm. If you want to sell it back, great. If you want to keep it, great.
And how do you determine the value of those shares?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. So, you know, all of these type questions, people often think that a co-op or an employee-owned is, like, more willy-nilly than a normal small business. The opposite is true. Mm-hmm. You have to be way more professional and tightened up with your, like, corporate structure and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the first things we did. And how part of that process is figuring out valuation. And we use a pretty standard approach, which is the value of all the equipment and inventory, plus the revenue from the previous year, and just divided by the number of shares. Mm-hmm. And so we do that valuation actually at the beginning of each year, just before we distribute the shares for the year.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure everybody looks forward to that valuation, don't they?
You know, it's fun. Honestly, it's a small business is a long-term investment, and everybody gets that, that's a co-owner. And the co-ownership part is really cool, but the other part that's really cool that doesn't necessarily go along with it, but we do both, is democratically run. So from the beginning of the business, we've had a board that was just me and my wife at first, but as soon as we had other people, it's a board with employees on it that decides the direction. So well before we were employee owned, we were democratically run or employee run. And I feel just as strongly about that as employee ownership. And they're actually two different things. You can have one without the other, or both, or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I read that German industrial practice has that sort of setup where they have a board of directors that mm-hmm. has a certain percentage of employees mm-hmm. From the manufacturing side, and they sit there and they have, you know, a significant, meaningful voice in operation of the company. So, mm-hmm. it seems to have worked for them. They're a very prosperous country.
It does, and again, the studies show that it works, and it just makes sense if you think about it. That type of thing can keep having employees on the board, or even just able to have a voice at the board, even if they're not on it, keeps the board from being too disconnected from their actual day-to-day operations mm-hmm. as a company, because that can really happen. Mm-hmm. And so that connection really keeps them grounded.
Well, the other thing I'd say is that Slaymakers is quite community involved.
Well, we try to be. You know, we know that we exist as part of a community, and we can't do what we do without a community, so it makes sense to participate.
And maybe you talk just a little bit about some of the things that you're offering to the community, like the recent comedy show.
Right. So we have started doing trying to do more nightlife events. We're going to be open late on Fridays. Well, late for us, you know, into the evening anyway.
After 8 o'clock?
Yes, and we're going to have events and things each Friday. We've got different plans in the works, but we'll have something going on each Friday. And you're right, this past weekend we had a comedy show. It was wonderful. It was a blowout. We were standing room. It was a wonderful group of comedians from Seattle that's touring. It was a lot of fun, and I'd love to do a comedy show again. Not quite sure how we'll pull it off, but we'll try to figure it out.
Oh, nice.
We also had a huge party this summer for our 5th anniversary. We had 8 bands, I think. It was like a music festival. It went from noon to midnight, solid music. It was a great time. We had a huge turnout. It was when the street was open for pedestrians. We're always trying to do stuff like that because it's just fun. Why not? And it gets people in to learn about our business, but it's also just a fun thing to do.
Yeah. I like the sound of that. So I heard you say earlier you threw out a number, hundreds of different outlets for your products. Mm-hmm. Let's investigate that a little bit. First of all, tell us, you say you have wholesale distribution to restaurants and liquor stores. Tell us a little bit about how that works.
Sure, and this goes back to what I was saying earlier about Colorado being startup friendly and small business friendly. So the type of a small winery license that we have allows us to self-distribute and to sell direct to customers and to have a tasting room and to sell other people's stuff in that tasting room. That's not common to be able to do all of that. Yeah. And to be able to set up tastings out and about at other people's locations, at events and things. So from the very beginning, we were out of our basement. We didn't have a tasting room at all, but we could go sell wholesale and we could self-distribute. So go out, taste liquor stores or bars on it. We place an order, we bring them a case or two or whatever. Nowadays, we're working with a distributor, Western, and Watershed, two different distributors. They're great. They come pick up like a pallet, and they get it to the liquor stores. Now, we still have a full-time salesperson that goes out and sells it, but just when they put an order in, they put it with the distributor and not with us.
I see. So, yeah, I wondered if you had somebody who was representing your product in the out in the world. And so, yeah, because it seems like, you know, you got to let people taste it before they're going to take a chance on it, right?
Absolutely. That's true for anything, but especially for me, because a lot of people don't know or haven't tried it before. Or, well, I had the stuff that my brother-in-law brewed, and I don't know. You know, so tastings are huge for us.
Yeah. And your commercial establishment, your Front Door, tell us about the growth of that. I'm sure when you first opened the door, especially during COVID, you weren't doing too much foot traffic, but how's it now?
Oh, well, that's right. And we've seen a slow but steady increase kind of as people realize that it's there and that it's a great place to relax with a glass. And we try to have a nice ambiance. We've got our flights, which is a great way to try the different flavors. You get five little samples of it. And we're also getting known more and more as a great wine shop, because we've got a very good selection. I just put another shelf together last week, and my wife filled it that day with stuff that was in the back and hadn't been able to be out. So we've got a very good selection of other Colorado grape wines, meads, ciders, and sakes. And so that's just a good slow but steady momentum building as people kind of learn that it's a good spot to stop for all of that.
You're saying sake?
Sake, rice wine.
Sake. I'm thinking fish, and I'm wondering. Sake. Yeah. Okay, sake, gotcha.
So most of your business, though, is on the wholesale side?
Dollars-wise, it's about 50-50.
Oh, okay. All right. And both are growing. You know, slow and steady is the best way to do it.
Well, that's really how we've approached it. You know, we didn't come at this with angel investors or a giant loan or anything like that. So it's been a spiraling up kind of process of just starting small and building out a bit at a time, trying not to let our reach exceed our grasp.
Yeah, self-finance.
Yeah, which is really tough, you know, really tough. But it's it's okay. And that spiral up method is much slower, but it can be much steadier, like foundation. And it means that we're very low debt, which is really nice as a business.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, very interesting. What's your best seller?
You know, all of the flagships do really well. But if you haven't tried mead before, then the Orange Blossom is a great workplace to start if you're a wine drinker. Mm-hmm. It's just very smooth and approachable. It's a semi-sweet, kind of like a Riesling. Or perhaps the Nice to Mead You if you're a beer drinker. Like I said, it drinks like a Pilsner. It's kind of a lawnmower beer kind of mead. But again, grain-free. So if you're gluten-free or anything like that, none of that in mead.
Wow. And does it say that on the cans?
It does, actually.
Gluten-free? So, yeah, good to know. Yes, it does. You're showing it to me. I can't see that out there in Radio Land, but I promise you, Kent just showed it to me on the can.
Absolutely.
Very attractive can, by the way.
Well, thanks. Local artists did that, Imberco. Nate and Cassandra, you'll see them running their burros in the burro races sometimes, and they do all of our art. They're wonderful. And, you know, we get our labels made at a place down in Denver, and the bottles are not made in Colorado, but they are made in America, in New York, I think. Mm. And, you know, it's just all of those parts together, trying to just think about not just the honey, but where everything you're sourcing is coming from. Mm-hmm. You can't always be 100%, but just even thinking about it and trying goes a long way, we found.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah. Well, any final thoughts you want to share with us about mead?
I'll just thank you all so much for coming. And anyone who's not quite sure what we're talking about or would like to know more, just come on down. We're right on Main Street at 1428, or on Minor Street on 1428. Yeah. And come on down. We're open
friendly,
7 days.
Friendly place. Nice, nice people who just come out and greet you and, you know, just wonder how they can help you learn about mead. This is fabulous.
Kent, thank you so much for spending an hour sharing your experiences with us. It's been great.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
All right. All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with another show next Wednesday. And if you missed part of the show today, you can hear it again on Friday at noon. And until next week, well, actually, I'll be back Saturday morning Morning with Mozart. So give a listen to that sometime. I think you'll like it. Yeah. Bye.